Empire Lines uncovers the unexpected, often two-way, flows of empires through art. Interdisciplinary thinkers use individual artworks as artifacts of imperial exchange, revealing the how and why of the monolith empire.
In this episode, Dr. Jared Hardesty picks up the party debris littered by New England's illegal imperialists. Via John Greenwood's 1750s painting, Sea Captains Carousing in Suriname.
It's late evening in a tavern in Paramaribo, then is now the bustling capital of the Dutch colony of Suriname. Poorly lit by candlelight, paintings cling onto the walls of a private room upstairs, which invites its foreign, white guests for a night of heavy drinking and merriment. Some men sit at tables or stand, many guzzling punch directly from the bowl. Others are deep in conversation, dancing or gambling. On the left of the scene, we see a raucous card game, high stakes based on the fine yellow silk jacket of one of the players. For some revelers, the overindulgence is too much. A friend attempts to wake two passed out pals in the center by pouring a bowl of punch poured on one man's head. A third man vomits onto the tavern floor. Doubled over, he comically ignites his jacket on a candle. Littered across the floor is the debris of the party, playing cards and punch glasses, liquor bottles, and long-stemmed tobacco pipes. Watching over the scene, four enslaved Africans stand around the room, minimized and vanishing into the background. This body scene is Sea Captains Carousing in Suriname, painted by the Massachusetts-born artist John Greenwood sometime between 1752 and 1758. These titular ship captains and merchants are from Britain's New England colonies in North America, namely Rhode Island, and partying in the Dutch colony of Suriname. Two of the men depicted actually commissioned the painting for proud display in their Newport, Rhode Island office. At the time, it was illegal for New Englanders, as British subjects, to be trading in the Dutch colony. Indeed, everything that happens in this painting should not have been. For that reason, Sea Captains is a subversive, even arrogant work of art. But by including the black figures in the painting, Greenwood ultimately demonstrated what underpinned these excesses of empire in a place like Suriname, the exploitation of enslaved Africans. As these ship captains are seen undermining imperial law, their participation in the business of slavery ultimately strengthened empire as a whole. Central to understanding the context of Sea Captains is the colony of Suriname. Located on the northeastern coast of South America, Suriname was originally colonized by the English in the 1630s and 1640s. The Dutch then captured the colony during the Second Anglo-Dutch War and kept it following the Treaty of Breda in 1667. Managed by a private company known as the Society of Suriname, the colony rapidly transformed into a booming plantation society. By the time of Greenwood's painting, Suriname had become a major producer of sugar, molasses, coffee, cacao, and other tropical commodities. Yet it was the labor of enslaved Africans that drove this economy. Suriname was the focal point of the Dutch slave trade, and thousands of captive Africans arrived in the tropical colony every year to be put to work on plantations. In 1750, there were over 40,000 enslaved Africans laboring in Suriname, vastly outnumbering the 2,000 Europeans and Euro-Americans. Most whites lived in Paramaribo, the colony's capital, and setting of Sea Captains. This meant in some plantation regions, blacks outnumbered whites nearly 100 to 1. Colonial Suriname is best understood as a society driven by a collective sadism and sociopathy, which placed economic productivity above everything else. It was a world of calculated terror, violence, and horror aimed at keeping enslaved Africans producing valuable tropical commodities. The human toll of such a system was staggering. The colony imported over 124,000 African captives between 1730 and 1780, but its total slave population in the 1780s was only 50,000. The cause of this great mortality was disease, brutality, and overwork. Suriname's equatorial jungle climate created the perfect conditions for mosquito-borne illnesses like malaria and yellow fever. Other tropical diseases and parasites, such as guinea worm, also plagued the colony. Exposed for long hours in the fields with little protection, enslaved peoples easily caught and died from these diseases. Moreover, planters, overseers, and colonial officials used extreme violence and torture on Suriname's enslaved population. Without the use of this violence, whites feared that these colonial subjects would rebel and destroy the very foundations of the colony's economy. Enslaved peoples, especially those on sugar plantations, worked long hours with little rest. Day after day, month after month, year after year, such heavy labor took its toll gradually and incrementally. Such so-called violence of the mundane murdered enslaved people and was one of the chief, if not the leading cause, of the high mortality rates on plantations. The average lifespan for an enslaved person working under these conditions was 5 to 7 years. It was this wanton destruction of enslaved people that met the European demand for large quantities of sugar, molasses, coffee, and cacao, and brought vast riches to those who owned the plantations. Sea captains cruising in Suriname obfuscates almost all the horrors of Suriname's plantation regime. It is a depiction of fun and frivolity, not terror and tragedy. Illustrating a night in the private upstairs chamber of a Paramaribo tavern, all the white men in the image were New England ship captains and merchants, members of a maritime fraternity of provincial Britons conducting business in Suriname. During the 18th century, Suriname was a major trade destination for British North Americans, like those depicted in sea captains. Over 4,000 voyages to the Dutch colony have been documented in that period. These men spent weeks or months residing in Suriname, conducting business and engaging in recreational activities, including patronizing Paramaribo's many taverns and clubs. It is their debauchery, drinking, and dancing that is the subject and action of the image. Enslaved people are also present, as they were in Suriname itself, but the perspective Greenwood used makes them appear absurdly small and diminished, rendering them marginal to the scene. At first glance, Sea Captains seems to tell a morality tale. Like the works of 18th century British artist William Hogarth, it could be interpreted as an exposé of the debauched lifestyle of the wealthy and allegedly genteel behind closed doors. But the painting's own history reveals a different story. The artist, John Greenwood, did not paint Sea Captains to condemn these New England ship captains, but most likely at their behest. Two Rhode Island merchants, Joseph Wanton and Essek Hopkins, both commissioned the painting and appear in it. Seated at the table in the foreground, Hopkins, in a blue jacket with red trim, is deep in drunken conversation. Wanton, meanwhile, is one of the passed-out partygoers. Bald from not wearing a wig, a friend pours a bowl of punch over his head, whilst yet another vomits on his jacket. It might seem absurd that these merchants would pay for such a self-condemning portrait, but it was intended as an amusing holiday souvenir for their return to Rhode Island. It was also an artifact of their success that they were able to complete such profitable voyages and commission paintings. The painting, in short, drips with arrogance and self-congratulation. Suriname was certainly a source of vast wealth for New England merchants and ship captains, although imperial trade restrictions of both the British and the Dutch limited commerce between these colonies, such laws were simple enough to evade. Suriname's white planters had an insatiable appetite for the types of goods offered by New England merchants. Salted fish, especially the cheaper grades of cod and mackerel, was bought up to feed enslaved Africans. Suriname was also in desperate need of horses for both transportation and to power sugar, grist, and lumber mills. By the end of the 18th century, New England had exported more than 31,000 horses to Suriname. They even bred a shorter, muscular horse specifically for these industries, appropriately named the Suriname horse. New England merchants also carried salt, flour, whale oil, timber, and naval stores. Without all these products offered by New England merchants, the productive, exploitative plantation machine, the centerpiece of European empires in the Americas, would have been significantly harder to maintain. Trade between New England and Suriname was thus lucrative and vital enough for both sides to disregard trade laws. For Suriname's white planters and merchants, their need for North American commodities incentivized trade in forbidden items, such as sugar, cacao, and tea from Asia to New Englanders. It also encouraged officials in Suriname to turn a blind eye or, in some cases, actively aid and abet this illicit trade. Meanwhile, New England ship captains and merchants, by their very presence in Suriname, were already in violation of British imperial trade laws. They had no further qualms in exporting banned goods from Suriname for sale in the British colonies. Knowing how desirous Suriname planters were for their business, they happily immersed themselves in this system of illegal trade. John Greenwood himself was very much a part and is painting a product of this extensive, largely illicit, inter-imperial trade. Born in Boston, Massachusetts in 1727, he spent most of his early life learning engraving, painting, and portraiture. After struggling to source clients as Boston's economic prospects declined, he departed for Suriname, where he lived between 1752 and 1758. As the son of a ship captain involved in the Suriname trade, Greenwood decided to embark for the Dutch colony before continuing to Europe, where he planned to further study painting. Like his sea captains, he saw the colony as a sort of holiday or gap year. He ended up spending over 5 years there, with plenty of work painting portraits of planters, merchants, and their families. It is unclear if Greenwood ever visited the actual tavern depicted in Sea Captains. Based on his diary, he actively partook in Suriname's drinking culture. But this particular setting is fairly nondescript and could be one of Paramaribo's many taverns. Also, as he separately painted the portraits of many of those in Sea Captains, he had ready access to the men's appearances. This would have made it easy for him to paint a scene based on the ribald stories told by Wanton and Hopkins. Like many other New Englanders, Greenwood found business in the foreign empire rewarding, amassing a small fortune to fund his future exploits. He moved to Amsterdam to further study portraiture in 1758, and then made a successful career as an art buyer and auctioneer in London, where he eventually died in 1792. As an artist, Greenwood is probably best remembered for Sea Captains. Indeed, it's the only painting from his time in Suriname to survive. Sea Captains Carousing in Suriname offers an inside glimpse into a long-forgotten history of empire, which remains important today. New Englanders, such as Isaac Hopkins and Joseph Wanton, enriched themselves through this illegal trade and invested that money at home. These funds transformed New England into the birthplace of American industrial capitalism after the United States became independent in 1776. Suriname was one of many plantation colonies where New Englanders conducted this provisioning trade. Its post-colonial history is so tragically similar to so many other former colonies in the global South, characterized by poverty, neo-imperial resource extraction, political instability, and underdevelopment. And yet, in the 18th century, both Suriname and the New England colonies were part of an imperial system that was porous and, for the fortunate few, lucrative. Sea Captains is also an artifact of defiance. It embodies the nonchalant disregard of imperial trade laws by opportunistic, striving colonists. We see them celebrating their defiance with a riotous party in a Paramaribo private club, a place where they were largely forbidden. And yet, that wealth and opportunity was built in abstract and concrete ways on the exploitation of enslaved Africans, the very exploitation that justified the imperial system in the first place. Above all, sea captains cruising in Suriname serve as a metaphor for how the pursuit of profit blinded and blinkered people from the terrible realities of empire. The sea captain's Suriname was a place of frivolity and riches, a starkly different Suriname than the place where enslaved Africans faced horror, terror, and exploitation.
Empire Lines is produced by Yelena Sofronievich. For more episodes, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.